Blog Talk Radio.
We invite you to listen to the Crystal Chanel Show every Sunday on blogtalkradio.com. You can listen in from 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. The call-in number is 347-850-8557. That's 347-850-8557. Listen live online at blogtalkradio.com/The Crystal Chanel Show and check out our website at www.crystalchanelministries.com. That's crystalchanelministries.com.
Good evening, and thank you so much for tuning in to the Crystal Chanel Show. I am super excited. I have Miss Jodine, you pronounce your last name for me.
Bastarash.
Awesome. I have Miss Jodine Bastarash, and I've been practicing this for a while, and then all of a sudden I got stuck. So thank you so much for pronouncing your last name for me. Miss Jodine Bastarash in the studio with us, you guys. She is a 14-year domestic violence survivor. And I just want to just start off, Miss Jodine, just to say thank you so much for coming on my show and being a part and telling the people your story and your testimony. How are you doing today?
I'm doing wonderful. Thank you.
Awesome, awesome. Well, you guys, we're going to get right into it. Ms. Jodine, if you could please tell the listening audience your story and your testimony. Please tell us your story and your testimony.
Okay, well, for myself, my story actually starts as a child being biracial in an era where there was not very many mixed children. So with my mother being Caucasian, my father being African-American, but being raised in a Caucasian household and neighborhood, I really did not know where I fit in at. And so as I was growing up, I went through a series of identity crises because of the things that I encountered, from cruel classmates to cruel adults to cruel neighbors and so forth and so on. So as I became a teenager, I got to a rebellious stage where I just really hated myself. I hated life. I hated my family. I had a lot of hate within me because of everything that I endured. I felt as if God had placed me here to punish me and God didn't love me. And I didn't understand what was going on. And so I started a lot with the rebellion with my mother, and it pretty much pushed me into the hands, or led me into the hands of one of my first boyfriends at the age of 16 years old, when I first started to encounter domestic violence. Because my father was not a part of my life, I confused a lot of the power and control that I encountered in relationships as a father's love or protection. So whenever I had to call him when I was coming and going places, I looked at it as, you know, he just really loves me. You know, he's, you know, concerned that I'm going to make it home okay. I'm going to make it to my friend's house okay. You know, I just really confused a lot of his tactics. The domestic violence started shortly afterwards with the physical fights and with the stalking and everything. And that lasted for 2 years. And after I got out of that relationship, where I just pretty much just got tired of going through it, you know, I didn't understand what I was going through at the time, but I just I just got tired of the relationship and just wanted out. About 3 weeks later, it led me into the hands of my second abuser, which ended up being my husband and children's father for 10 years. Once again, you know, being confused a lot with the power and control, thinking the jealousy and things were cute and that they was just all, you know, levels of concern and everything. You know, because I did not have my father in my life, I did not have a father figure at all. So I did not know what a healthy relationship was supposed to look like. I never saw my mother be abused. I never saw anyone in our family, not even if I was visiting friends. I never saw abuse. So therefore, I didn't know the difference between healthy and unhealthy. And because of the lack of identity and low self-esteem that I had growing up, I just wanted to be accepted. And so when the abusers would put me down and they would say mean things to me, I was was crying out for them to love me. So if they said I was too skinny, then I would try to eat a lot to try to gain some weight. You know, if they didn't like my hair long, then I would cut it short. You know, I was doing everything that they wanted me to do because I was trying to appease them. I didn't really, you know, understand what was going on. So, you know, it just continued. Unfortunately, my children were witnesses to it. It was done in front of them. And the cycle, you know, started with them as they became young adults. Unfortunately, they're a statistic. You know, as I mentioned for myself, I wasn't a statistic, but they are a statistic now. And I wanted to get out, and I didn't know how to get out. I was afraid. You know, that's to a point where, you know, initially I loved him. I wanted to help him. You know, as we speak on domestic violence, you know, we talk about the honeymoon stage. You know, you go through the abuse, and then they're apologetic, buying you gifts, they're sorry, it'll never happen again, and you believe them. Because after all, it's not that you want the relationship to end, you want the abuse to end, and you feel as if you can help them. But after some time, once you see that, okay, this is getting worse, you know, I can help them, they're not trying to change, I didn't know how to get out. And I thought the only way I could get out was to kill them. Because he had threatened my life in so many different ways. So I had it all planned out. I was going to wait until he came home drunk. I was going to set the bed on fire, and I was going to escape. Thankfully, while I was waiting for that time to come, I came to my senses, and I said, you know, if I, you know, go through with this, it's going to be, you know, a lost situation, not only for myself but also my children, because either we're both going to end up dead, or you know, I'm going to end up in jail and children in the system. You know, no matter how you looked at it, it wasn't going to be a good situation. And before that time had came, when I knew I had to get out, I remember my oldest daughter was always the one that was like my little nurse, because she was always the one, you know, I would always yell out to the kids to go to their room to hide. And, you know, I didn't want them to see or hear it. But my oldest daughter was always the one who would be, you know, looking out of her door, or when the abuse was over, she would come and she would aid me, you know, wiping the blood, wiping the tears, wiping the bandages, you know, getting ice. And, you know, she was just always there for me. And it took that one moment when I looked up at her when she was bandaging me, and I said, wow. I said, no matter how many times I tell my daughters, never let a man treat you this way, and tell my son, never treat a woman this way, it didn't matter, because we as parents were showing them something different. And so I said, okay, this cycle has to stop now. And I remembered one of the times when the police did come to the house, seeing on the pink slip that they gave, the courthouse. Now, the officer made the mistake in handing it to me in front of him, because after they left, he snatched it. So I didn't really see what it was all about, but I did see the courthouse. And that next day after that particular incident, I went down to the courthouse, said, you know, I don't know where I'm going, what to do, et cetera, explained to them the situation, and they told me a restraining order. I went through all of that process. I went through almost a two-year divorce with their father, because there was a lot of fighting and struggle back and forth, him trying to take the kids and so forth and so on. But I found after that I still continue to be involved in unhealthy relationships, and was right back into another abusive relationship. And it seemed as if when I did find a good guy that treated me well, talked to me well, I didn't like him because he was too nice or too nerdy, as I used to say. I was always attracted to the bad boys. You know, if they wasn't calling me out of my name, you know, if they wasn't treating me a particular way, I didn't think that they loved me. And so, you know, the cycle just continued, and it just got to a point where I finally had, I guess you could say, I really, really, really woke up and was like, you know, I need to get some healing for myself. The last abusive relationship that I was in, he actually had left me, which was a good thing. So I didn't have to try to escape out of that. But I took time to myself, and in taking time to myself and learning about my self-worth and self-value and love and learning how to love myself, that's what started to change the cycle for me as far as the abuse and not going back into them particular situations. Wow.
That was a mouthful.
Yeah,
so if I'm counting, was that three or four different abusive situations?
Well, it was three long-term abusive relationships. But in between the second and the third one, I still had a few unhealthy relationships where it was mostly a lot of verbal or emotional abuse.
Mm-hmm.
Out of the three main ones, it was a mixture of the physical and emotional abuse.
My goodness. So did you experience the financial and the spiritual abuse as well?
No. Nope, I've never encountered spiritual at all.
Okay. Wow. Let me ask, a lot of people, I'm going to say, for their self-identity, what do you think caused you to lose your self-identity, to lose, you know, to be in a situation where you have low self-esteem and, you know, dealing with the rejection and, of course, you know, growing up without a father?
And what, I'm sorry, ask the question again because you sounded kind of low.
No problem. Sorry about that. And I'll turn the volume up just a little bit as well. Growing up and dealing with the self-identity and the low self-esteem, the rejection, and then, of course, growing up without a father, how was that experience?
Well, that's what led to a lot of the different trials that I encountered in life, because I wanted to be accepted. I wanted to be accepted so bad. And even as an adult, you know, I still encountered, you know, various issues in friendships because, you know, I don't know, it was kind of like a sensitivity where, you know, you encountered a lot of phony friendships or relationships.
Right.
You know, and you know, when you're younger, you know, you deal a lot, and even unfortunately sometimes with no matter what age, I guess you could say, you know, you're going to have the positive and the negative. You just have to know what type of females. But, you know, as they oftentimes say, you have to be careful when it comes to women because sometimes they can be messy.
That's it.
You know,
that's
I learned, you know, that I used to be attracted to the messy, I guess you could say. And, I mean, I could be with some females, you know, just in regular friendship, and say if there's four or five of us in a room and we're just hanging out having a good time, and say two of them, you know, are whispering amongst themselves or talking low about something, I thought they were talking about me. You know, I was just so kind of sensitive, like, okay, what are they saying? Are they talking about me? You know, what's wrong? You know, I even found myself looking for their approval as well.
Gotcha.
It was hard. You know, as I was growing up, I remember hearing people ask my mother, where did you get her from? I remember holding my hand next to my siblings or my mom. You know, we would hold our hand or arms side by side, and I remember I would ask them, you know, why are you a different color than me? Why are you lighter? Why am I darker? Because I didn't fully understand, you know, what was going on. Because, I mean, I knew my father, so it was like I never met him. But it still was unfamiliar for me because of the environment that I was in, and I just didn't really understand, you know, the difference in races. My mother always raised me, you know, you don't look at the color of the skin, you look at the heart. And so I couldn't understand how people would be so cruel. The little white kids in the neighborhood would play with me until their friends came home, and then as soon as they came home, then they would leave me alone. Then we moved to the other side of the town, where it was majority African American. Now I'm dealing with vicious little black girls because they're following me home from school, rubbing gum in my hair, pulling my hair, cutting my hair, just doing all sorts of really mean things, and I didn't understand what was going on. So going through a lot of those experiences and feeling rejected all the time, it wasn't a good feeling, and it made me, it also affected my faith in life as far as stepping out and trying new things and wanting to do things for a while because I was afraid of rejection. I didn't want to be rejected because for so long I've been dealing with, I'm like, I just want to be accepted. I just want that unconditional love, whether it's a friendship or whether it's an intimate relationship. Everybody has their pros and cons, but why can't I just find that unconditional type of friendship or relationship? I was always sensitive to everything that was going on.
That's amazing. And, you know, I'm just listening to you explain that and tell your story and your testimony is powerful. And just it's good to know that we as adult women, we're not always we're experiencing the same, some of the same things. I mean, for example, even for myself, yet to this day, I experience the rejection, and that's the rejection on the end coming from a woman's point of view as well as for the men. I get it on both sides. And sometimes, you know, it gets me down and out, but not for long. I have to snap out of it very quickly, and God just reminds me that, okay, Crystal, you're blessed in so many different areas. You can't let that particular one thing get you down to this point to where, you know, you're just sad about it, you know? So I understand exactly where you're coming from. That's powerful.
Yes, yes. It really takes you to get to a certain point where you can get strong so that when you do encounter the different situations, you look at it more as that's their loss.
That's it.
You know, instead of looking at it as, you know, woe is me, you know, reaching out, why don't you like me? Why won't you accept me? You know, it's, you just get to a point where you're like, you know what? Oh, well, because if that's the type of person you are, then I don't need you in my life, even if it means I have to be alone.
That's it. And, you know, and I'm one of those type of people. I'm a loner, and I'm trying my best to get out of being that way because it's not always good. You know, everybody needs somebody. So I'm trying my best to get place sometimes. You know, sometimes it is, but sometimes it's not. So that's
right.
Good.
Sure.
Let me just ask, because I know you said that you experienced multiple rapes.
Yeah.
Please explain to us, how do you experience multiple rapes? And I'm not saying that to be negative, but a lot of people, and some people, somebody's out there wondering, like, okay, like, how do someone really experience multiple rapes? Because a lot of times they may think that person is telling a lie.
Yeah.
And so I just need for you to, if you would touch on that just a little bit for me.
Sure, absolutely. So the first rape that I actually encountered was as a child. I was actually in the fourth grade. When we first moved from one side of town to the other, there was an older gentleman that had actually just moved in across the street from us. And he actually tricked me into coming into his home to see his videotape collection, his movies. He was talking to me, you know, asking me, did I like movies? And I love movies because it just so happened that my mother, that was her hobby, was recording and watching movies. You know, she had a movie collection. So when he said that, I was like, oh, yeah, you know, of course, immediately I thought of my mom and her movie collection. And I wanted to see the movies. And so when I went into his house, he showed me the movies, but then that was also when he had attacked me. Now, I'm in the fourth grade, and this is a grown man. I don't know how old he was or anything of that sort because, you know, I was so young at the time. But that was when my virginity was actually taken from me. I never told my mother because I was very in the fourth grade.
Fourth grade, okay. So that made you what age?
I was around 8 or 9.
Wow.
And I never told my mother because I blamed myself because my mother had always told me never to talk to strangers. Well, he was a stranger, but he wasn't a stranger because he was a neighbor that stayed across the street.
Right.
And, you know, when you're that young, it's so easy to be, you know, lured into something. Because
that's true.
I do remember having some hesitation and going like, should I or shouldn't I? you know, but mm-hmm. he seems so nice, you know. And I'm like, well, he lives across the street, you know, and whatever. But I did. And so after it happened, I was so scared. And I wanted to tell my mom, but I couldn't. I'm like, my mom's going to be so mad at me because she told me never to talk to strangers. You know, I should have never mm-hmm. went into his house. You know, I blamed myself for what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And so some years later, now I'm in the sixth grade. Mm-hmm. And it was on the playground before school, and there was two of my classmates. They called me over to the dumpsters. And the bell had rang, you know, at our particular school, when the bell, you know, you played on the playground till the bell rang. Then when the bell rang, you went, you lined up in your corresponding classroom, waited for the teacher to come and get you. So mm-hmm. two of my classmates called me over by the dumpsters. They was like, hey, Jodine, you know, come here, come see this. And I went, and when I went, they pushed me behind the dumpster, and that was when the two of them had gang raped me.
My God.
I wasn't going to say anything at first because, once again, I'm looking at it as being my fault. I was in shock. I was scared. You know, sixth grade, the early teenage years, I want to be mm-hmm. accepted. I'm trying to be accepted. These are two popular boys in the school. If I say something, you know, one, are people going to believe me because they were, right. you know, on the basketball team and, you know, like I said, they were popular. And then mm-hmm. two, I'm never going to be accepted because they were popular. Now the other girls, you know, are going to be mad at me. They're going to be on my case. Oh, you're lying. That didn't happen. You know, that type of stuff. Thankfully, mm-hmm. though, someone did see what had happened. They wasn't sure. The student wasn't sure if I had actually, you know, got raped or not, but they saw them on top of me and they saw me struggling. They said something because about an hour later, after we get into the classroom, staff came, called me out, the cops were there, you know, it's a big ordeal. So authorities and everybody did find out, you know, about that situation, and my mother took me out of that school.
Great.
Fast forward a couple of years later, now I am in the, it was around the 10th grade, and my mother's boyfriend's nephew actually came over to the house, and he was a big, stocky guy. And he had, you know, I knew he had a liking for me. He had been flirting with me off and on. And I wasn't attracted to him, didn't like him. For two, he was mm-hmm. a little bit older. And I looked at him as a cousin because my mother had been dating his father for quite some time. And
gotcha.
He came over and visited in and out here and there. But there was that one particular day that he came over and he forced himself on me. I did not say anything about that one because my mother, she was going through a tough time in the relationship with his uncle, where my mother was actually being emotionally abused because he had a lot of other women and he was just really, really playing her per se. But my mom loved him so much, was so crazy about him. I would see her crying a lot, you know, with a lot of things that she was going through with him. And I wanted her to be happy, and I wanted everything to work out. And I said, you know, if I say something, you know, it's going to cause more problems. And so I didn't tell her. And
wow.
Those were my first three sexual encounters. And when I look back on it, you know, so many times I'm like, wow, how did that, you know, happen? Why did it happen? You know, I mean, it's just crazy for it to happen like it did.
Mm-hmm.
I did. My mother is deceased now since 2012, but I did have an opportunity to finally open up to her and tell her about the first and third one before she had passed away.
That's one of my questions I was going to ask you, so I'm glad you expressed that. My God, let me just ask, what happened to the individuals that did this to you? Did they ever receive any jail time or anything of that nature?
They did, if I'm remembering correctly, because, of course, the first one and the third one, you know, authorities, you know, I didn't say anything, so authorities didn't get involved. But the two young men, I'm trying to remember. I mean, I know they got expelled from the school system, and I believe they were in a detention of some sort. but not really. Something did happen with them, but not much. It was kind of like a slap in the hand in a way, because I remember my mother being upset about the whole ordeal, and she wanted, she felt that something more should have been done.
Absolutely, and I totally agree. So it was just like, you know, they got what they wanted, unfortunately, and they got away with it at the same time.
Yes, and it caused more problems for me, because exactly the reason why I wasn't going to say anything, because of the students at school, they did live, one lived in the neighborhood, one lived a couple of blocks away and was always over in the neighborhood, and they did cause a lot of problems for me in the neighborhood, so much where we actually ended up moving from the neighborhood, where they were getting other kids to not like me and was like, she lied, she got us in trouble, you know, things of that sort. And again, because they were so popular and people liked them, people were believing them and taking their side. So it was really, really hard. But that was, you know, again, going back to that whole rejection and wanting to be accepted and not understanding, you know, what's going on and being afraid. You know, when you think about children that are being molested by family members, the reasons why they don't say anything, you know, is very much similar to just general rape.
You know, and it's sad to experience that from a stranger is bad, of course. But from your own family, you know, my heart aches when it comes, when I hear stories like that, you know, that they, you know, someone may have experienced something from a family member, because those are mostly the people that we trust the most, are supposed to trust the most. But these days and time, it's like you can't trust nobody, you know. And I have a 7-year-old son, and I'm very cautious with him, you know, in regards to where I let him stay, you know, if I let him stay at someone's home or whatever the case is. I'm very, very, very selective, you know. So I just want to say that my heart aches, you know, just to hear your story, just to hear your testimony. And I am so glad that you are definitely a survivor. And not only are you a survivor, you are an overcomer of everything that you have experienced. So God bless you. And I'm going to try to get through this interview without crying. But my God, you know, and I know there's always somebody out there that story is worse than yours. So at the same time, we have to still be grateful. We have to still count our blessings, because, you know, the next person that you hear that, you know, the story may be worse than yours. So not to, you know, say that your story is not, you know, not to low, you know, put your story on low standards or anything like that, but it's just always somebody out there that has a worse story. And I just try to be grateful and mindful of that. But what right now, I just want to take a quick commercial break. I almost don't even want to take no commercial breaks because it's so good. But I'm going to just take a quick commercial break, and then we'll be back. And for the listeners, if you are out there and you are listening, if you have a question or a comment for Ms. Jodine, please feel free to press 1, and I'll make sure that you get your question or your comment in with Ms. Jodine, okay? One moment, and Ms. Jodine, just stay tuned, and we'll be right back, okay?
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
I am an overcomer. I am an overcomer, yeah.
A breakthrough. A breakthrough. My breakthrough is in my grace.
Just the other day, I was going through my trial. Didn't know if I would make it out. Heard a voice say,
I am an overcomer, yeah.
All right, you guys. Miss Jodine, that was for you. That was actually a song by my girlfriend. Her name is Calandra Gant. And the name of that song is titled In My Praise. I am an overcomer, and I am dedicating that song to you on this evening. So God bless you, and I hope that you enjoyed it. No problem.
Thank you. Yes, that was beautiful. What is her name?
Her name is Calandra Gant.
Calandra
Gant.
That
was In My Praise. And she actually has a radio show also, so I will definitely make sure I send the interview over to her so that she can hear it. But we're going to continue on. I actually have a surprise for you, and I have one of my girlfriends. Her name is Crystal Murphy. And I'm going to bring her on, and she's going to dedicate this song to you. Not song, oh my God. I'm thinking about the song that we were just listening to. But anyway, she's going to dedicate a poem to you and the domestic violence survivors. So let me just bring her on.
Oh, nice.
Crystal, are you there?
I am.
Awesome. You have the floor, hon.
Okay. First, I just want to say thank you so much, Crystal, for having me on your show and just inviting me. I'm so thankful and grateful. So thank you.
You're quite welcome. Thank you for tuning in with us.
Thank you. And I'm just so grateful just for the testimony that you just heard. So I'll get right into the piece.
It's powerful.
It's very. So I'll get right into the piece. I also want to dedicate this to you as well, Ms. Crystal Chanel.
Oh, thank you.
You said he hits you because you make him mad. Yeah, I've heard that line before. But what if I told you that beneath the low self-esteem, the lack of awareness of self-worth, the bruises both physically and mentally, there's so much more to you. As simple as it sounds, I can imagine it not being easy for you to digest that God didn't create you to be ordinary, but extraordinary. He created you to be the best, and yet you settle for less. Why is that? Oh, you lie to yourself oh so well. The picture-perfect couple, at least that's the story social media tells, but if your walls could talk, you mask the pain, and sometimes it seems endless. Never forget the words of the wise. Love should not make you feel like you're dying inside. Instead, love should provoke the most intense feeling of selflessness. Yes, that's real love at its best. No, love is not abuse of any kind. Never mind what the naysayers say. Suffering from their own form of abuse, if you love them, you'll stay. Don't listen to the lies that aim to keep you in bondage. I pray that you become free. Free from the notion that you need a man to make you whole, not realizing that your wholeness comes from God and God alone.
Yes.
Allow God to infiltrate your every thought and watch your mind and life transform to be what God created you to be. You said he hits you because you make him mad. Not only does he hit you physically, but inwardly as you cry from the depth of your soul, why does he do this to me? And freedom continues to call, waiting for you to answer. If no one ever told you, then today is a special day. Ask God to show you himself, and he will beyond what your mind could ever conceive. Know that God loves and values you and is calling for you to be free. You said he hits you because you make him mad. And my hope is that you come to know who you really are and the light that shines within. Never compromise your greatness. You were not created to fail, but were created to win. Thank you.
Yes.
My God.
Yes. Oh, that was awesome.
Thank you so much, Crystal. Please tell the listeners how would they contact you if they needed you to do a poem or a spoken word piece.
Sure. Well, I'm on Facebook, Naturally Poetic on Facebook. So it's Naturally Poetic. Also, you can email me. My email is my first name. That's C-H-R-I-S-T-L-E. Last name is Murphy, like Eddie Murphy, M-U-R-P-H-Y, 2004@yahoo.com.
Awesome. Thanks again so much, Crystal. We appreciate
Welcome.
That poem. God
Welcome.
Bless
Thank
you, and please continue to stay and tune in, okay?
I will. Thank you.
Thank you. Awesome. Jody, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Awesome, awesome. Well, we're very grateful for that poem on this evening. That was wonderful.
Yes. Yes. Oh, that was really good. It brought
yes.
tears to my eyes.
Yes. I'm just trying to keep them back. So I understand where you are right now. It's very emotional right now. My goodness.
Yes.
Okay. Well, let me just ask, because I know that growing up without a father, there's a lot of people that is in that situation. And then also, it goes both ways. I mean, there's a lot of people that are in situations where they don't have a mother, or the mother is not involved, or they don't have a father. You know, what would you tell that person that is going through that very thing right now?
That doesn't have a parent?
Mm-hmm.
And they're going through some trials?
Yeah, they're going through some trials or
okay.
Just piggybacking on where you were and where, you know, the things that you had to experience while you were growing up as a teenager. You know, if
mm-hmm.
you were a teenager at this time, you know, what would you
mm-hmm.
tell that teenager? What would you tell that child that's 8 years old that is currently experiencing not having a father or not having a mother?
Okay. The number one thing that is very, very important to know is that oftentimes we do a lot of self-blame for the decisions and the circumstances that are in our lives. And we have to understand and know that no matter what we are going through, no matter what we are experiencing, there's nothing to be ashamed of, and you are not alone. It is not your fault. It is so important to find someone that you can confide in. And if you don't know anyone that you can confide in, I always recommend journaling. Journaling is a guide mm-hmm. and steps to healing, because it is so very important not to keep that bottled up inside. One of the things that I also went through as a young adult was various suicide attempts.
Mm.
And I kept a lot inside. And one of the things that the psychologist had said was that I was like a walking time bomb, because I would keep it inside until I couldn't anymore, and I'd get to this explosive manner where I would just explode. And, you know, my mother and I had problems where I actually fought my mother because I hated her so much. I was rebellious in the things that I was doing, skipping school, drinking, doing drugs, running away, you know, fighting. I mean, I just was doing so much rebellious things. And I blamed a lot of it on myself, wishing I wasn't here. You know, blamed a lot of it on my mother. You know, I always had to find somebody to do the blame for. And what I had to learn, what helped me eventually, was that I didn't have anyone that I could talk to. I didn't have anyone who understood what I was going through. People would say, oh, I understand, but do you really? Do you know what it feels like to be raped and not be able to tell anyone because you feel it's your fault? Do you know what it feels like to be raised in a mixed household in an era where there's still a lot of racism and there's a lot of prejudice going on and you're being treated wrong and so forth and so on? Do you really know what it feels like to be beaten by somebody that says they love you? I've been stabbed. I've been shot at. I've been dragged down the alley on the outside of a truck. I have been through a lot, just to name a few. And unless you walked in my shoes and experienced some of that, you really don't understand what it feels like. Now, it's okay to be sensitive to say, you know, that, that you feel sorry or you're feeling their pain, but you don't really know what it feels like. And that would pull me back. And what I had to learn, and I tell other women, I actually was doing these healing workshops, was journaling. Speak to people about journaling. You know, write out your feelings, write out your pain. You know, talk, release it. You know, and it's so important to know. One of the things that I'll be talking about on next Saturday, as you know, the title of the event is Living Behind the Mask. It's time that we start to embrace and accept who we are, the situation that we are in. It is time to start removing the mask of unforgiveness, of shame, of self-blame, of guilt, you know, and so forth and so on. We have to start accepting ourselves for who we are. We are unique. We are made in God's awesomeness. Mm-hmm. We are God's invaluable, precious ruby. We are that virtuous woman who he created us to be. Stop allowing for other individuals to dictate to you who and what you are. Who cares if you're fat, skinny, dark, light? When it comes to that time, when we go before the throne on Judgment Day, God's not looking at all of that. He's looking at our heart. We're not responsible for other people's actions. My mother, even though she didn't understand a lot that we was going through, and I put a lot of blame on her because I was always feeling that I wouldn't be going through what I'm going through if you would have never had me. Why did you have me? Why didn't you just get an abortion? Why didn't you just kill me? You know, I blamed so much on her. And even though she, with her being a Caucasian woman, she didn't understand what I was going through, but she still showed me lots of love. Even when I treated her like a dog when I was a teenager because I was so angry with her, she still treated me with love. And that's exactly what we have to do now throughout our trials. Not saying that you still have to befriend a person, that you still have to be with that man or woman who's abusing you. No, 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 no. I'm not saying that. But what I am saying is that we cannot hold ourselves accountable for somebody else's actions. We have to learn how to love ourselves. We have to learn our own self-value, self-worth. We have to embrace ourselves. We have to accept the fact that we are unique, that we are wonderful and magnificent. We have to walk in that bold step so that as we're walking in those bold steps, it will help us to make better decisions in the type of friendships we have, in the type of relationships that we have, and just the choices that we make in life, period. I can relate to what you said earlier, Chris, when you said, you know, you're like a loner. I'm the same way. I do a lot of networking. I do a lot of different things. But at the end of the day, I'm still like a loner because I still have that protection around me because I don't want to be hurt. And because I don't want to be hurt again and go through it, and I know my value and my self-worth, I'm very cautious now as to who I allow to step within my circle and step within my boundaries. It's not that I think I'm all that and I'm better than anybody else. No. I have to surround my people with other like people, and I have to be careful with the type of spirits that are around me. I can love you from afar. I forgive my abusers. I forgive the individuals that raped me. I can't hold myself accountable, even though I said if I would have never went in that house, it would have never happened. I stayed in the abusive relationship for 10 years with my children's father because I grew up without a father, and I did not want my children to grow up without a father. So it was so important to me to keep that family together. But I had to come to the point where I'd say, you know what, I think I'm doing the right thing by staying in this relationship for the sake of our kids, but I'm doing more damage because I'm showing them what love is supposed to look like. No matter what I say, our actions are showing something different. So when I started learning from those mistakes, it goes to the saying where we say, when you know better, you do better.
You do better.
So if you have a positive role model around you like myself, I didn't have anyone to talk to. I didn't have a positive role model, a family member, or anybody around that could take me under their wing and could, you know, help me make those right steps and decisions. I had to learn on my own. And one of my role models, which she never knew, was my pastor. I would watch her, how she carried herself from the pulpit, how she carried herself in the church and in ministry, and I admired that. This was somebody who was positive and carried herself like a lady. And I would watch the things she would do, and I would have conversations with her, you know, and I learned from that. So if there's not someone that you know, there's somebody out here who you consider, who you look up to. So just mimicking yourself after them, following, you know, in their footsteps, learning from them. And if you are able to have a conversation with them, then that's even greater. But the number one most important step or mindset that you need to have is don't allow yourself to get stuck in the woe is me. Because it happened, yes, but you know what? You can change what happened by changing your future steps.
All right, you guys, I hope you heard that. Wow. Oh, my God, this is so good. I really don't even want to get off of the phone. I tell you, let me just ask you. I know that when I was reading your bio and going over your bio, it stated that you were chosen to attend a year-long domestic violence awareness leadership training at the state capitol in Wisconsin. Tell us about that experience. That just seemed a whole year. Tell us about that.
Yes. Oh, my gosh, that was so awesome. So basically the National Domestic Violence Agency for the state of Wisconsin had this year-long leadership. It was called We Lead Leadership Academy. And once a month, you actually had to go to the state capitol, which was Madison, Wisconsin, for a two-day training. It was an all-day training. They paid for everything, for your travel, your hotel, of course, your class and materials, as well as your food stipend. So you, the only thing, you know, you just had to be there. But basically, you know, it went through a regular submission process, application process, and you had to get a few referrals or references. And out of everyone that submitted in the entire state of Wisconsin, they only chose 11 people because they wanted to keep the class small so they could give more one-on-one. And so thanks to God, I was one of the 11 that was chosen. And
that's
it was
awesome.
Such a great, great and humbling experience. I learned a lot, and it was just really great, and it was very unhumble. You know, it was just so, it was so humbling to be one, you know, out of 11, and to have the type of inch that we had, the leaders that we had, and sometimes they'd have guest speakers come in, and it was just really great. I actually miss being in Wisconsin and being able to, you know, do some networking and interacting on certain projects with them, because now that I'm in Illinois, I still communicate with them. But, of course, you know, I miss out on those different opportunities due to travel and not being a resident for some.
Wow, that's great. And I can imagine that that was an awesome experience, and I'm glad that you had an opportunity to experience that.
Yeah.
Let me just ask, what do you have as far as like your different events currently? What do you have coming up soon?
Okay. Well, next week Saturday, I will be coming to Atlanta for the Rose of Sharon's event, Rose of Sharon Transitional Living for Women, a domestic violence agency in Atlanta, Georgia. They are having a fundraiser gala, 2015 Living Behind the Mask Masquerade Ball. So I'm really excited because I've spoken at numerous of domestic violence events before, but never one on this level where, you know, you're able to dress up and have a mask, you know, the formal attire, and, you know, it just sounds really nice. So I'll be the keynote speaker for that event. You know, as I mentioned, that's a fundraiser she's doing for the shelter that she wants to open soon. And then the weekend after that, on October 31st, I will be speaking at another event in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, where I am a keynote speaker. And that one, once again, it's not formal attire and as nice as Atlanta, but it's nice. And I shouldn't say as nice. I shouldn't say that. God forgive me. Because it's going to be a great event as well, but it's just not going to be the purple carpet style of an event.
Right.
But, yeah, so I'll be in Milwaukee on that particular day. And then in between time and throughout the week, you know, I've been doing – October's been very busy for me, seeing it's the Awareness Month, where I do various speaking engagements, either leading support groups, speaking to youth, for example. Thursday, I was actually speaking to a group of youth. There was about 20 of them, and just sharing my story and speaking on teen dating violence and so forth. So I do a lot of mini or community speaking engagements, which a lot of them I'm not able to promote or speak on due to the privacy of the locations, because I do so much with the agencies and everything. Right. So, you know, and that can be challenging sometimes, because I get so excited when I see the progress of, you know, the victims or the survivors. And it's like, oh, I just want to share, but I can't, because I got to keep that, you know, that privacy there and confidentiality. Mm-hmm. But next week, Saturday in Atlanta, and the following week in Milwaukee, those are the two big major events that I can talk about.
And I'm super excited, because I am I'm looking forward to meeting you, and I am one of the honorees at that particular event. So that's going to be a wonderful event. I just can't wait.
I did not know that. Yay.
I figured you knew. But God bless you. I'm super excited. I cannot wait to meet you next week. You have a wonderful spirit, and I can just feel it over the phone. So I really, really appreciate that. And the interview process with you have been just wonderful. And I am going to definitely have to bring you back on the show, you know, because an hour went by so quick, and it's just like, okay, wait, we just got started. You know, we really just got started. But I want to ask you, I heard you say earlier you got drugged by a car. I was dragged by a car. Can you just repeat those experiences that you went through? I think I heard you, but I wasn't too sure.
Oh, sure, absolutely. I've been shot at where the bullet actually had just missed my head, just grazed past. I moved just in time. I've been stabbed, been thrown down the stairs, thrown across the room into a TV head first, and dragged down the alley on the outside of the truck.
No.
The name of few.
Wow. So for the person that's experiencing domestic violence right now, what would you tell that person? What would you speak into that person at this moment?
Oh, my goodness. How much time do we have left?
We have about 6 minutes.
Oh, you know.
But don't worry, I'm going to bring you back on.
That's always so delicate, because you never know where they're at, what level that they're at, you know, because until a person's ready to leave, they won't leave. You know,
that's true.
They say it takes a woman 7 times before they actually leave for good. And so you have to always be so sensitive in talking to them in comparison to where they're at. Are they still protecting their abusers? Do they realize that something's not right, or are they ready to leave? So what I often tell individuals, I have a lot of people that will contact me and say, hey, I have a loved one or a friend that's going through domestic violence. How can I help? Because so often people want to tell them to just leave. And that's the worst thing that you can do, because when you have to have that safety plan. And when you tell a victim to leave the situation, the abuser, gets irate and gets upset because now they're losing control, and that's also yeah. one of the deadliest times of victims to lose their life with and just leaving without a safety plan. Even with a safety plan, you have to be careful. So I always mm-hmm. will speak to individuals and let them know that the best way to help a victim of domestic violence, and as I say, anyone who may be listening to this show right now that is going through domestic violence, is to let them know that you always have a listening ear right here. If you need someone to talk to, no matter what stage of what level you are at within your relationship, if you need someone to talk to, I am here for you. Find someone that is there for you. You need to know that you are loved. You need to know that what you are going through is not your fault, no matter what your abuser is telling you at this time. You are smart. You are lovable. You are brave. You are courageous. You are awesome. You are wonderful. You are magnificent. There is yeah. not anything that you can do that you cannot do. You can do anything that you put your mind through. If you haven't finished school yet, you can finish. You can do it. You can get that high school diploma. You can get that college education. You can get out here and get a job so you don't have to depend or rely on your abuser for financial support. There are mm-hmm. many resources out here that can help you. Don't ever feel that someone is not around to help you, that there aren't resources out here that can help you get out of that situation. Even if it comes, if you need somewhere to go, there are shelters. And if there aren't shelters in your city, there are shelters in other states. There's always somewhere that you can go. I need for you to understand that your life is not dependent on that abuser. Your life is not dependent on your abuser. You can do anything that you want to do. I don't care how many kids you have. My abuser used to tell me that nobody's going to want me with four kids. That they're going to think that I'm just trying to find a sugar daddy or a father to take care of my family. And I believed them. And that was another reason why I stayed, because I didn't think that I could find anybody else, anybody that would accept me and my children. But I'm here to tell you that I have found a wonderful man, even though my children are young adults and they are out on their own right now, but I have found a wonderful man that accepts me for who I am, who loves me unconditionally and loves my children for who they are and loves them unconditionally. Any man who doesn't love you and your kids is not a man or a woman that you need to have in your life. So don't let anything that your abuser has told you to keep you under control and under their wing, under their wrath, don't let them dictate your life, because your life is so much more important than living in that turmoil. Tomorrow is never promised. He may not have hit you yet. She may not have hit you yet. Maybe it's just verbal or emotional abuse right now. Mm-hmm. But you know what? That's all it takes is that one time. And sometimes words are deeper than physical wounds. But the bottom line of it is that you are still experiencing some form of domestic violence that you were not created to accept. That is not what God ordained for your life. So it's important for you to know, to be bold, to make that courageous step, to get the help that is out here, to move on to a better future. I used to think that there was no way I would ever see the light again. I went through so much pain and darkness being under that spell, per se. But now it feels so beautiful to be on the other side of the rope, where I can see the sun shining, where I can feel loved, I can feel accepted, I can be around positivity, that I know I can do anything that I want to do. I know that there's resources that help. And most importantly, I can do it without having fear, That is so important. So I hope that in hearing my story on this evening and what I have just had to say, I hope that it gives you faith and hope. I pray that it gives you courage. Even if you don't make that step right now, today or tomorrow, to leave, that it will always be a seed that is planted in the back of your mind for you to make that step tomorrow, or make that step a month from now, or 6 months from now. The bottom line of it is, if I can get through it, and if other victims can get through it, you can too.
Awesome. And thank you so much for sharing that. Oh my God, I'm going to definitely have to bring you back on the show. So we will definitely make sure we schedule that, you guys. I just
am so excited, and I am just overjoyed right now. But I pray that this have really helped someone on this evening. You guys, again, we have Ms. Jodine Bastaresh in the studio, and thank you so much for tuning in to the Crystal Chanel Show. God bless you guys.
Thank you. Thank you.